Welcome back to Customers Who Click, the e-commerce podcast for D2C brands. In each episode, we will look to answer one important question. What is the one thing brands should be doing right now to get customers clicking? Each guest will take us through actionable insights and real-life examples from brands excelling in the art of customer attraction. So whether you're looking to enhance your conversion rates, boost average order values, or extend customer lifetime value, this is the podcast for you. Visit customerswhoclick.com for all our past episodes and to connect with us. Now dive into the world of D2C e-commerce with us and unravel the secrets to keeping those customers clicking. Today's guest is the delightful Shivali Benyon, Managing Director at D2C Live, an incredible community inspiring, educating and connecting D2C brands with everything they need to grow. Shivali, welcome. Tell us why D2C Live.
Thank you for having me on, Will. It's a great empire building here and looking forward to your 200th episode coming up soon. Yeah, so D2C Live, I'm Managing Director, which is always a title that means a little bit of everything. And D2C Live is a great community that's built basically on the need that founders, brands, they don't particularly have a community, or there are some communities building up, but at the time that we created it over 3 years ago, they didn't have a place to really talk to one another and share insights, share struggles, but also share some wins. So over 2 years ago, we created our first conference, which was meant to be a dinner with 12 people, and it turned into 120 people.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And we've been doing them ever since. So this year we'll be doing London, Manchester with Rainy City, New York with Underground Ecom, and then hopefully the world.
Amazing. Yeah. Where would be the ideal location for you?
I mean, I've just come back from Mexico and I'm in love with the country. So put me on a hot beach anywhere, like Dubai, anywhere that has some sun, has some insights, obviously, but also a great way to kind of get some sun and see and escape from rainy, cold London.
Yeah, I know what you mean. No, Mexico's a great choice. Yeah, great. Cool. So what do you think is the one thing brands should be doing at the moment to get customers clicking?
So I think it's really interesting. I was head of D2C for over 5 years across multiple brands like Jimmy Choo's, Sophia Webster, but also Naughty Haircare, KMI Brands, multiple brands. And really, I think one of the things that they talk about in their brainstorming sessions or their brand meetings is talking about their competitors as if they're the only things that they're competing against. When in the reality of D2C and e-commerce and even in retail is that you're not just competing for wallet share now with your competitors and your direct competitors, whether it's a hair care brand or a skincare brand, you're actually competing against the wider market, particularly as we're going through economic challenges across the globe. It's really now an attention economy that we're seeking, where you have to get, like the name of the podcast, people clicking, people engaging, and then Obviously most brands have the aim of them converting and then becoming loyal.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. Something we focus on a lot as well with our CRO programs. There's always been that obsession with competition, right? And it kind of, and you know, you can see how this happens, right? People are focused on their brand, their category, their products. How do we sell our products better? So it kind of becomes easy to think, well, if you get someone to click an ad, or if you get someone to watch an ad, they're focused on your category. Therefore, the only thing you have to care about is either you or your competitors, because you've got that attention. Whereas realistically, you've interrupted their day with the majority of ads. You know, they've clicked through, you've kind of got their attention, but there might be five other things going on around them right at that moment. They might be on their way to do something. So they're either going to get distracted and have to go do something else, or, you know, they might have even been doing research on a completely different set of products, but somehow ended up seeing your advert as well.
And I think most of the time, especially with like the rise of TikTok more recently, but I've been in paid ads for, you know, since the rise of PPC, paid media, etc. And when we were spending $2 million a month at Wonderbrow, back in 2017, it was a really easy way to get in front of people because there wasn't many people spending that much money. We were in front of 2 times the American audience in 1 year. So everyone who was, you know, female 18 plus had seen our adverts on average around 2 times across those platforms. It would be, you'd have to spend 10 times that, 20 times that, God knows how much now, to be able to get that type of viewership. So I think that you're not just competing against like you mentioned, the CRO perspective. Like, you're not just competing on your website for attention. They're probably likely looking at something else on Amazon or something else on a retailer or a price comparing, or looking at how much budget they might have that month and whether your product at your AOV is justifiable to their wallet. And I think people think that there's a lot more discretionary spending than there actually is. Yeah, so I think it's interesting. It's actually brands we find in our community when we're doing our game changer sessions, where we teach brands all about D2C each month, or whether we're talking to them in our conference. Like, we find that brands really hyperfixate on their little piece of the market, when in fact you're not just competing for a hairbrush or a hair tool or a hair product. You're competing against a cinema ticket or a nice meal with your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, mum, dad. So actually, that's something that's really important, when actually, is it more of a thing that you can build into your routine, etc. So I think it's harder now than it ever has been to be able to get people to click, and God knows how you do it for all the CRO stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, isn't it? You know, share of wallet has, I guess, traditionally been seen as for your category, right? If someone is going to spend on your category, then you need to own as much of that share of wallet as possible. And that assumes that someone has a dedicated, I don't know, 5% of their budget every month for your category, right? And some categories that will be true, probably. You know, I guess like skincare is probably going to be, you know, it's not a luxury. It's basically an essential, right? You know, people who spend money, you know, decent money on their skincare routine are not going to let that get disrupted as easily. Whereas, you know, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but maybe another hobby or something, people might say, well, this month I don't have the money for that. I want to buy this instead. Right. So then even loyal customers who are loyal to brands, you know, you might see some of that loyalty and LTV drop because 1 month they don't have the money to spend on your brand, which they've normally done. They've gone off and spent on, maybe a skincare routine or something, or new clothing that they've got to buy.
100%. And it's also about the need of the product. So I have psoriasis. You might not be able to tell, but my skin is a real priority for me because it's a source of not just a little bit of insecurity, but also pain if it gets too dry and scaly, and don't want to go into details of that. But I think, so I'm far more likely to buy a product that will help that particular need. And I've spent far more money on that particular area of my skincare than I have on retinoids or other products, because for me, that's so important. Whereas some people, like my boyfriend, despite him stealing all of my skincare, would never really pay the same level of money on like the skincare. He might choose to go to a football game with his friends, or he might choose to do some of those things. And I think when you're advertising, or when you're trying to get people into your funnel, really, you've just got to be conscious of, there's not just 1,000 other skincare brands, because the democratization of products has become so high at post-COVID. It's also that, you know, you're competing against lifestyle. And some things are luxury products that are a treat. So making that philosophy of, actually, this is something really lovely that I can treat myself with, or treat a family member, or gifting, is really important, I think. And that's really where, once brands start to figure out that actually it's not just a hair product, it's a part of a community, or it's a part of a value system, or it's a part of a wider founder story, or something that they can get a bit more deeper connection to, I think brands do really well then.
Yeah, I think there's some great communities that built up over the last few years because of exactly that, right? They're building on those values and trying to give more value to the customer than just what the product does. But I think, you know, one interesting way to think about it might be, you know, to think about what you do as a business, right? How many times do you get on calls with agencies or, you know, whatever other service providers, and you end up saying, oh, we haven't got budget for that this month, or, you know, we'll revisit this in March when we've got budget. In the B2B world, you get that feedback immediately. People just bounce from your website, right? They might take a look, and they might go, oh, I wish I could have that, and they might add it to their cart. But, you know, if they haven't got the budget, they just leave. And the brand assumption is always, something's wrong, we've lost that sale, you know, why didn't they convert? And panic mode almost.
Yeah, I've worked for many brands who have definitely defaulted to panic mode. And I myself have been that person who, you know, when you're in a brand, you're siloed to what you see in the data, and what you see in the data is week on week, month on month, year on year. And you're comparing yourself to yourself, which is fantastic. And there are benchmarks that are publicly available, but not for your niche, not for your industry. For example, in Naughty Haircare, there was a real strong niche within the curly girl community, curly haired people. And actually tapping into that is really powerful because they've got a particular need that has a much more higher discretionary spend, but the products were also tailored and created for that with that in mind. So I think that actually that natural synergy between, yes, you've got this difficulty at the moment with actually navigating budgets and spends and what people can do on an individual level. I think it's also, just as you mentioned, like, important for brands to get context of wider, like, socioeconomic situations. Like, my favorite example is when it's a bank holiday and everyone expects it to do really well because it's a bank holiday spend, but it's actually really sunny outside, and in the UK people go down to the pub and spend all their money there. Yeah, and that's kind of when brands might see it as a really bad sale or it not performing, but in fact, you know, people are just off doing things with their friends and their family, and they might actually convert on that Monday that they have off, etc.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important to realize that while the brand and the products are the most important thing to you as the brand, it's not to your customers. Right? They, you know, if you're doing your job properly, which we'll get into in a sec, they will come back, right? You know, like you say, they might get distracted by a bank holiday or something, spend all the money in the pub or the park or whatever. Or they might just have another expense that pops up and they go, well, I have to pay for this, right? My car got hit the other day. I've got a £750 excess to pay, which I'm not particularly happy about. And that is obviously going to affect some other spending, right? Some other potential luxury expenses is probably not going to happen, at least this month, because of that. But how can brands get around that a bit? You know, what can brands be doing to either make the most of that attention or provide the value so that if they do lose out on attention every now and again, people still remember them and come back?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think that it's kind of twofold. I think the first place it starts is in the brand strength, so the authenticity of the brand. So I always think Fenty Beauty is a great example of this for inclusivity and diversity shades for beauty, because they came out with 40 foundation colours when that was unheard of. And it's a big cost to the business to hold that much stock. That was a purposeful decision. Same with Rare Beauty. They do beauty specifically for people with disabilities. And they're the type of things that actually just show that they do everything really purposefully. And people then do see that and see that authenticity coming through. And it doesn't have to be those bigger budgets. There's brands doing that are still startups where they know their core mission. I think there's a brand called Lilo that I've seen recently who are doing a great job with sustainability. But, and same with, you know, some great brands out there that are startup level that have that authenticity coming through that really can cut through kind of those typical like white label and buy off a website in China, try and ship it through drop shipping kind of philosophy. And I think second fold, there's like a deeper level to that. It's about a lot of brands that we find have these wonderful messages that they've curated. And I think brands do truly try and make the best of what they do. They do it everywhere all at once. You must see this all the time when you see websites where there's like 80 messages and no more clarity and it's been lost because actually there's no content sequencing, there's no storytelling, there's no real thought in terms of what do different communities want to see and what does different demographics, psychographics really pull into. And I think that really helps as well. And what do you find in CRO?
So I guess on that last point, I think what we see is a lot of the time either different teams are getting involved, and so different teams have different pop-ups and things, right? So you'll have live chat, you'll have the loyalty widget, you'll have email pop-up. Then someone like me comes along and wants to gather feedback, right? So I'll try and put a feedback pop-up up as well. Other times what we see is, and I think the issue is a lack of resource, right? which so people don't have the time to think through these things properly. So when a new opportunity comes up, so let's say someone's got live chat on their website and they've got an email capture pop up, right? The two probably the most common widgets you'll see on a website. But every now and again, you get a loyalty one as well. And I think what happens is people see the, you know, they come across the loyalty program or that company reaches out to them and they think this is a great idea. We're going to increase our lifetime value and stuff. And they just implement the kind of best practice stuff with the loyalty program without considering any of the other things that are going on. And that's what causes a bit of that, you know, inconsistency and confusion for the customer, because, and that's what happens, you know, when you load up a website and suddenly there's like 5 or 10 different pop-ups all happening and you have to wait about a minute before you can actually use the website. So I think, yeah, one of the issues is just people rushing things out of it.
And I think having been brand side, like I'll tell you a bit of an antidote on that, which summarizes it perfectly. I came into KMI Brands. It was a retail first brand. They didn't really have much of an online department. And I was hired alongside our content manager and we both went for the job. We both got it, but she's a lot more focused on creative. She's our creative director now. She has her own wonderful agency. And I'm a lot more technical. I've got a lot more like P&L experience and all of the kind of boring mathsy stuff, which I really like. The CRO stuff I love as well. And when we kind of came in, it was actually like doing really well, but actually a retail first brand approaches D2C completely different than a D2C first brand. And, you know, and when you're starting off, you don't necessarily have the stock. If CVS comes through, then they'll be prioritized and your bestseller will be out of stock for a few months. And, you know, and all these challenges teams face. And then, you know, lockdown happened. 3 months in, we were growing 320%, but my entire team got furloughed. So for 6 months, it was just me. And we grew from 200K to 1.5 million that year. And it's interesting because actually a lot of SaaS platforms and partners that we talk to when we're a lot of our amazing sponsors that we have in our community are always like, oh, brands take forever to make decisions. Oh, we want conversions on day one. They should know that whether they want something or not based on the platform they've done the demo or whatever it may be. When in fact, I used to in-house everything when I was head of D2C. I understand the philosophy because we know that we've got more time and energy to be able to spend on some things. I think CRO is slightly different, by the way. But equally, we don't have the time because we think we do. And then something happens and stock issues pop up or you have to do forecasting and that takes a lot longer than you think because things change and there's new product development and all of these things that snowball. And actually brands have a really hard time trying to not just keep up from a day-to-day doing the work perspective, but also keeping up with the trends like what's just happened on email marketing and Gmail, like having to know that even is a thing. I think most brands just get overwhelmed with the day-to-day, so they can't think a lot more strategically. And that then impacts a lot of the things that you were talking about. They just say either yes to everything and do everything and that all of these pop-ups are on the website, or they say no to everything and it takes 2 years to do. There's no real three.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, people think, go into it with, you know, good intentions. They want to in-house stuff because they want the control. They want to do it properly. Maybe there's a feeling that an agency is just going to do it the agency's way. And, you know, you might have to give them some guidance and stuff. But then, yeah, either stuff doesn't happen or it just gets rushed through because they haven't got the time and something's been on their task list for ages. Maybe they've told people about it in a meeting. And so people are saying, well, where's the update on launching a loyalty program? And that's where things start to move probably in the wrong direction, I'd say. But you see, going back to your point about when you mentioned dropshipping and stuff, you can tell. I mean, this is something we look at. We've got it as part of our checklist, one of our CRO checklists. You can tell when a brand, or you can tell when a e-commerce website wants to be a brand and maybe just isn't quite doing it right, as opposed to an e-commerce website which has no intention of building a brand and just wants to drive traffic, sell the, you know, the cheap products or like high margin products and just move on. And that's it. And if they can, you know, recycle people through email marketing, great. But there's never an intention to build a community or anything. It's kind of, let's see how much cash we can get out of this business And then once it starts to, you know, decline in profitability, we'll just close it up or sell it.
You know, like I see a lot of brands doing really well at TikTok Shop at the moment. And of the brands, like there are a lot of brands selling 55p toilet roll, but there are also some great brands working with influencer strategies, linking it to their website, doing a holistic approach that actually is just adding another channel into the mix. And it's still a lot more workload and it's a lot of resource. But equally, like you just mentioned, if you do things well, then there's always going to be that if you do, or you are able to put resource in, whether it's outsourced from agencies or an extra team member or any of those things, even sometimes for smaller, really small companies, just some support on like any of the kind of pay per hour websites there are. I think it's really, it's interesting how much when you do put in those resources, you then get back. And I do see that a lot of the time, even marketing teams, I was talking to a team at Penny Black about this yesterday, where their marketing team really supports something, but because it intercepts with operations, they might get blockers there. But when in fact, actually, if they have that system in place, the return on investment through the recurring customers is worth its weight in gold. It's much higher. I think it's hard for brands to actually compartmentalize. Yes, there's a resource challenge here, or you'll have to dedicate some time of day or take some time out from things that they might see as more important on day one. But actually investing in things like CRO, investing in long-term plays like SEO or email marketing, with so many brands we see don't have email marketing set up and like the basic flows, and we're like, oh guys, like you've got 100,000 people on this list, let's email them.
I've come across that a couple of times as well, where they're collecting emails, some of them even have a pop-up, right? But then you look in their Klaviyo and there's a welcome email and that's it, and nothing else. Someone mentioned a brand on LinkedIn day or yesterday. Cannot remember what the brand, I can't remember what the brand is, but I have seen it on TikTok. And they exploded basically through influencers. Just loads and loads of influencers who talked about their products. So I can't remember anything about it now. So it makes this a really bad story. But yeah, like there was a strategy behind it. You know, they got on with it. And I think, you know, one thing that we do, I think we do quite well now, is when we're looking for that external support ourselves, we have a system in place for how we find people. And then we have a very clear briefing process. Because initially, you know, I wanted someone to do some video stuff for the podcast, some editing to put together, to help us put together the short clips. And initially it's like, oh, I'm going to have to write a brief. I'm going to have to get all the assets together. Then I'm going to go to Upwork or something, put a job on, find some people, read all their applications, which are all copy paste and generic, maybe trial a few people, see what happens. But now that we've, you know, we've got this process, and it kind of involves just getting it done, getting on with it, and just being as clear as you can with what you need, but also saying, if you have any questions, any more questions, ask. It actually works really well with ChatGPT as well. When you give it a prompt, you can just say, you know, do you have any questions before you do this task? And sometimes it will ask, you know, it'll be stuff like, I struggle with this task. Do you want me to give it a go anyway? Or do you want me to ask further questions? Which, yeah, it's not the most helpful response at that point because you've asked it what it needs. But I've just found that process of just kind of getting on with stuff, putting a brief together, providing as much as you can initially, but letting the person know to ask questions if they've got any, that works really well. We've made some really good hires and worked with some good freelancers because of that. Whereas previously, like a couple of years ago, I probably would have done it myself in the end, because I would have gone, is this too much hassle? I don't want to pay 12 different people because they're all not very good and I'm struggling to find someone.
Well, I mean, that's why we created the Edit Squad, which is essentially one of our outsourcing. It's the ability to outsource editing at scale. So Tash had a problem with not being able to act, and despite having like a creative department, not being able to do her own content. So she's gotten big media background, our CEO. And actually, one of the hardest things, Will, just for your point, is actually the hiring process. It's the vetting, it's the training, the upskilling. I mean, like I mentioned before, Cassie, our creative director, does all the training. So she's come from like Coco Neve, Sand and Sky, did the John Lewis social media strategy, all of these things. And that level of insight layered into all of those processes, I think it comes back to a processing. And actually, that goes back to a brand thing where One of the things that we did quite recently last year is train the team at the Inky List in all things D2C. So we help them with their reporting, their forecasting, financials, but also upskilling them across the D2C landscape. So email, website, performance marketing. And I think one of the things that's most powerful, just to your point, is actually the processes around that, inputting like set processes that we've had to use as an agency for over 6 years, but also my experience coming from heading up D2C teams and obviously Tash's experience as an entrepreneur and all of the freelancers consultants that we have. It's interesting, actually, when you put in processes things, even if it's as simple as like asking ChatGPT, if this is a question, do you have any questions on that? I think it's a really powerful tool.
Yeah, and obviously we just, you know, it's the kind of standard advice, but every time you do something for the first time, make a note of that process. And then, you know, you can try and make it better later, but at least write down what you did the first time, so you've got a starting point. Brilliant. So just before we finish up, have you got a big kind of regret or mistake from your career?
I mean, I'm a very optimistic, probably way too more optimistic person, typically. Despite me focusing on some of the economic challenges that we've had, I actually think that things all happen for a reason. So I don't particularly have many regrets, but I've definitely made a lot of mistakes. So I think one of my earlier mistakes, back when we were spending $2 million a month, I was managing the US and the UK industries. It was in the US majority brands, about 60% of that spend was coming through those markets. And I had found that, you know, we were spending all this money on Facebook. At the time, there wasn't really Instagram, but there was eventually, mostly Facebook. But we didn't have a PPC structure in place. So I created the full PPC structure by from all the different markets, all the different products. It took me about 2 years all in all. And in that, Google was doing really well. The return on investment was better. The blended cost per acquisition was going a lot lower because we were bidding on things that we knew we would win, etc. You know, the typical tactics that we'd use today. But back in those days, it sounds like ages ago, back in 2017. But then it was all manual bidding. It was a lot harder to do. There wasn't as many brands being as aggressive as we were on our spend. So we were able to get great results. So all of this happened. And then I was like, okay, great. I'm going to do it for Bing. And then I copied and pasted the campaigns over and just let it run because it said it would copy and paste it exactly how the campaigns were. Anyway, technical level, instead of doing like a broad exact keyword, which basically means the exact word for anyone who doesn't want listening, it was a broad keyword and we ended up bidding on the most ridiculous unrelated things to do with like beard oil when we were a female cosmetics brand, like the worst things, because Bing basically saw the budget and run with it. And I ended up spending $60,000 on keywords that didn't actually matter towards the brand, which you could argue was a brand awareness play, but you wouldn't.
Brand awareness, or, you know, I guess out of a $2 million budget, is it that bad?
It was pretty bad. It had a lot more. I think it was that sinking feeling that you get when you make a big mistake. And it was the fact that I went in, I think I've always done this quite well, I think, and I would say this for any brand, some brands shy away from the negatives. But I went in, I looked at the campaigns, thought, I would swear, but probably can't, thought a few things that threw my head. And I just, you know, I owned up to it. It was my mistake. It was something that I, you know, was building out alongside something else. It was a waste of money. Like in a lot of money, to be honest, you know, someone's yearly salary. I know it was double mine at the time. And yeah, and it's just interesting. I think one of the things that taught me, though, is I'm quite a big thinker. Like I'm a very great strategist, but the attention to detail is also really important. I think one thing that I learned very early on then is, okay, well, if you're going to do something, plan for it. First of all, don't launch it on a Friday. Second of all, and third of all, I think it really made me have that kind of decency and urgency to admit mistakes quite early on because, yeah, whilst it was a big mess up, I ended up making the company so many more millions than I would have if I wasn't working there. But I think it was all okay in the end. But I think at the time I wanted to crawl in a hole and die.
Yeah, so as long as you can look back at the stuff you did well and say, well, you know, think of this as a test.
Like once my intern deleted the entire Dropbox of all of our creative and I had to be like, and she didn't tell me for 3 or 4 days after, like it was just coming up to 3 days and you could only restore it up to 3 days. So the IT team loved me that day. But yeah, and you know, she was crying. It was really emotional. But I was like, look, I've messed up. I've done worse than this. We can get this back. Like any problem, I think, has a solution, even if it's a problem where both of the options are quite bad.
I kind of did that once. I deleted my Dropbox off my work computer because I was using it there because, you know, we'd used Fiverr to get the maximum referrals, right? So we were on 19 gig each. It was at a startup, right? So trying to do stuff on the cheap. I was leaving that company, so I deleted Dropbox off the computer. Forgot that it was synced.
Oh, no.
Right? So I didn't delete the folder off the work computer. I deleted everything. And I was having a mad scramble at home. I went on, you know, loaded up one computer, and that's when I realized what I'd done. So I went and switched off the Wi-Fi, opened up a dead laptop that was just sat around. Anyway, spent ages trying to get that working and just copied everything out of the Dropbox folder while it wasn't connected to the internet just to save it. But yeah, very almost lost. Like, it just so much stuff that, I mean, to be honest, not a lot of it matters now, but, you know, there was like all the stuff from my startup that I'd closed the startup so it didn't matter anymore, but it was like, you know, it's still nice to have stuff and look back on. So, well, I mean, this has been amazing. Thanks so much, Shivali. If anyone wants to reach out and find out more, what's the best way to contact you or find out more about DTC Live?
So DTClive.com is our website. You can find all the stuff that we're doing, the events, our monthly events, conferences, our newsletter, obviously, so that's an easy one. But if you want to reach out, I'm always open to a conversation. You can reach me out on LinkedIn or you can do an inquiry form. I actually respond to them eventually. Okay. I respond to every single one. And yeah, it would be great to have any conversations. As anyone knows, I love meeting people and I'm really glad that I met you, Will. So thank you so much for having me on here.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. That's all we have time for today. If you have any questions or would like to add to today's conversation, join me here on the podcast, sponsor the show or work with me. Simply email will@customerswhoclick.com, visit our website, customerswhoclick.com, or connect with me, Will Lawrenson, on LinkedIn. But until next time, keep those customers clicking.